This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings and welcome to mission number 16 of the Galaxy Wars podcast. We are your host, The Grays, and today, like we mentioned in mission 15, we are going to talk about the pilot episode or episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Which,
we're moving away from Doctor Who. So we've pretty much done Doctor Who and Star Trek episodes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's our niche. who knows? But
who knows what our niche is?
Well, wait until December comes because we're gonna flip our script up. So this episode started in 1987. It premiered in 1987, which is the same year that I was born. So it's a little special for me. It was September 26th. So I was about 6 months old when that happened. A day after my mom's birthday. So that's pretty cool. And it's a long episode for the first one. It's an hour and 32 minutes.
I can't remember it originally airing, but you know, maybe they do it now as one and two.
Yeah.
But it might have aired in a 2-hour block because I don't know. Yeah, it might have.
That would be a way to kind of start it. Now, before we even get into this episode, is in your opinion, is this your favorite iteration of Star Trek?
Yeah, I said this before. I think the stories were deeper in like Deep Space Nine, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And like Voyager was a good way of creating new aliens and new people and new problems that you don't, because it's in a different part of the universe. But this is what's got it all rolling again. And it's crazy that they gave it a chance because Star Trek wasn't doing great at this point because the movies have kind of failed by this point. All of, like going back, the first one doesn't hold up that well. I like it. I think it's fun. I think they're all fun, but they're really not great movies.
Yeah.
So the fact that they gave this the green light is great. I think it's
And it got 7 years, seven seasons.
It's definitely you break it down to the characters. Patrick Stewart's awesome. Jonathan Frakes is really good actor turned better. I think director. LeVar Burton's awesome. Worf. Yeah.
This is certainly the most recognizable cast for me going into Star Trek. You know, we've said it before. I wasn't a Trekkie. I had not seen pretty much anything other than the Chris Pine movies and Nemesis. So going into this, it was like, I know these people from all the conventions I've gone to. I've seen seen Denise Crosby at conventions, and I knew her from Star Trek. So when we got to this, I was like, okay, I know these actors, and I like some of these actors. These are people that I can get behind. This is a series I want to start watching. And then when I'm watching this episode, and we'll talk about it, but there's parts that if it weren't for us watching that Nog episode or the Deep Space Nine, there was a Ferengi reference in here, and I knew exactly where I was. I was like, okay, that's Nog, that's his people, that's Quark's people, that's
And it's like, I hope he tastes as good as his last. The Ferengi were originally supposed to be like the bad guys for this. It kind of switched over to the Romulans, and then kind of went all over the Borg, but
so Ferengi used to eat.
Literally went to the Borg.
Yeah,
but
they used to eat people, right?
Well, I think in like three episodes, you see the way they wanted the Ferengi to go. They have like laser whips, and they're kind of like they're like militant, like little chimpanzees.
So they're essentially Charlton Heston's version of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where I mean it's around the same. I mean you pick from couple decades before to kind of
they were supposed to be the big bads in this, but they weren't taken. You couldn't take them seriously, and they weren't taken seriously.
Well, look at them. I wouldn't be
right.
I wouldn't take them seriously.
They were, you know, they had to get. I don't know how they did it, but the actors they got made them like comedic relief.
Yeah.
So that's what they turned
into. I mean, when you look like that, it's very hard to be. I mean, they have some gnarly teeth, but like other than that, they're not a very imposing
They're not species. Like the Klingons. They're not like, so.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk about the cast, but the people we're going to focus on today are Patrick Stewart, who plays Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Jonathan Frakes, which is Commander William T. Riker, LeVar Burton, Geordi LaForge, Denise Crosby, who plays Lieutenant Tasha Yar, Michael Dorn, who plays Lieutenant Worf, Gates McFadden, Dr. Beverly Crusher, the mother of Wesley Crusher, who's played by Will Wheaton. Marina Sirtis, who I think we saw her at
Philadelphia Comic Con. LeVar Burton.
Yeah, and Frakes was there, I think, too.
I don't know.
Well, she plays Counselor Deanna Troi. Brett Spiner, another character that I knew before this from Outcast, who plays Lieutenant Commander Data. And then guest stars a couple people like John DeLancey, who plays our villain Q, right. And Michael Bell, who plays Zorn, who plays Admiral Leonard McCoy from the original series.
DeForest.
DeForest. Still a very, very unique name for my man. His name is Jackson in real life.
Yeah.
Jackson Kelly sounds like a folk singer.
Well, I think what he had to do, because he was a Western actor.
Yeah.
And he made he's on what's that, Bonanza?
Yeah.
I think I used to watch Bonanza with Haas. Bonanza got Haas, right? I don't know. I can't remember.
I think so. Or Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke. I think that was it. He was a Western actor.
He was on The Cowboys.
All right.
Yeah, Bonanza.
Yeah.
But he was in 4 episodes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, he was there.
I get what you're saying. DeForest Kelly plays Admiral Leonard McCoy. Colm Meaney.
Yep.
Who plays Battlebridge Khan? That's his name.
Yeah. Is this
the ushering in to Colm Meaney? Because I mean, he was in it for, I think it said 56 episodes. So he kind of like.
Well, he goes to Deep Space Nine in the middle of fourth season.
Yeah, because his name has changed. Like on his credits, it changed from like Commander Battlebridge Khan. Then it was like Chief O'Brien. Yeah. And then it was.
They technically, I guess, if you want to keep it canon, they give him a demotion, but whatever. They're shaking out the bolts and seeing what sticks. And yeah.
For him to get a demotion, he made a lot of money.
Right. But no, he stays on as chief.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it made him famous. But I think also they wanted more Data. And
yeah.
They wanted Tasha Yar, spoiler alert, dies in like episode 20. So, and they put Worf as the security chief. So they switched everything around.
Yeah.
So I think that pushed him out of the, which is, you know.
Do you think Yar just wasn't resonating with the, she wasn't connecting with the
audience?
No,
I think she was. And I think, like, it's hard to tell back in 1987 how they could go week by week and figure it out. They must have had a plan to kill off somebody, but. You know, it's like Game of Thrones, man. Your favorite character dies.
Yeah, you never know who's going to die. The last person that's in this is Kari Hayoki Tagawa, and he plays the Mandarin Bailiff.
He is
Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat.
And just about every other time they need an older Asian man.
Yeah, it's him. And I wrote that down. I was like, and Shang Tsung's in this episode, too. But our episode is called The Encounter at Farpoint, Parts 1 and 2. And as per our IMDb, it says, on the maiden mission of the USS Enterprise, parentheses, NCC-1701-D, an omnipotent being known as Q challenges the crew to discover the secret of a mysterious base in an advanced and civilized fashion. But there's so much more to this episode than just that. This was a good start.
Yeah, they come right out of the gates, and I like everything about this episode.
Yeah, me too.
What was the documentary we watched John DeLancey on? It was about the Bronies.
Oh God, yeah.
So I don't like John DeLancey and everything that he's done.
Yeah, he plays like the villain, right?
Yeah, he's the voice, and he's like one of the head producers, and he made the documentary. You know,
a BronyCon.
Yeah.
Oh, what a bad pull from YouTube. Or no, it was on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
That's a financed movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He
financed. Star Trek money went to
My Little Ponies. And he's probably making bank now because they just put out a movie. But this is not the My Little Pony podcast.
John DeLancey's pretty great in this.
Yeah.
I don't know if I knew him from anything. I'm sure I would have recognized him. But
He kind of looks like, and I know it's 1987, but he looks like the main lead in the show Suits. Okay. He looks like the guy Hardy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I look back and I'm like, this is how stupid I am. I looked at my IMDb and I was like, is that Hardy? Like, he hasn't aged 30 years.
But I will say, it's This is, I don't know, how, you, what did you watch it on?
I watched it on Netflix.
We're not, I know we're not a platform advertiser. Yeah. We don't care about any of that stuff. Usually it's stolen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I watched it on Netflix too, and I do, they have digitally remastered.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
Looks very good.
So you could get fooled into.
Well, he was super shiny in this episode.
Yeah.
His face, he was glistening.
Yeah.
And he had some great outfits.
All the outfits were great.
Yeah, he was something.
And we'll get to the courtroom scene. I that was awesome. I liked the, like how he just moved in and out of the frame and got into clothes. Like,
yeah, they did a very good job with this episode. And the episode kind of starts off as Star Trek shows with a space intro. Your captain is narrating the whole thing, and for this is our captain is Patrick Stewart. And we see the Enterprise, and their mission is to go to Dunub 4 to examine Farpoint. And Farpoint is a planet that we are going to find that is super advanced. And then we find out a little bit more about Farpoint. But in my mind, and what the episode depicts, is that Picard is still getting to know his crew. He has no first officer, but he has a guy named Riker waiting for him.
We are at a point where I think he just gets the command.
Yeah, this is like his first day on the job.
Yeah, definitely first mission, first day. And yeah, Riker's coming off of, I think, I can't remember what the ship is. Anyway, and he's going to become the first officer. And
he's waiting on Farpoint. And what's interesting about this is that they only say that Riker's waiting on Farpoint, but it's also the Crushers. Geordi's there.
Yeah.
There's another half of the crew that is going
to
be.
Well, I think he was getting to the fact that, you know, most importantly, the first officer there. I don't have a first officer. You also don't have a chief engineer. And at this point, Geordi's not a chief engineer.
But he wasn't going to be like, oh, there's a blind guy on Farpoint 2 that I'm really interested in. Who, Geordi's a cool character. I like him. And I told you from IMDb, initially he was supposed to be gay.
Yeah.
It's a risky move in 87.
And that's probably why it's not didn't happen. Great storylines with this guy, with Geordi, and I thought, you know, he wasn't a lot. He was always in the scene, but he wasn't doing a lot. But the fact that he has to act like he's blind and do things and show emotion, it kind of like, I mean, he's a great actor. He did Roots.
Yeah.
And, you know, Reading Rainbow, but
he wasn't acting. That's how I know him.
But, like, go back and think of all the great acting he's going to, like, the acting that he has to pull off.
Yeah, he has to wear
with a blindfold on.
Yeah, he has to wear the visors and then the contacts. And from everything that I've seen in podcasts that I've listened to, when people have to play blind characters with the contacts in, they are literally blind.
Yeah.
So it's extremely. I was listening to Ron Perlman was talking about, he did a movie with Marlon Brando. I think it was Animal Farm.
Okay.
And he had to wear those contacts, and he said you couldn't see a thing, like you were literally blind. So for him to go through the entire series, because he was in 123 episodes, 156 episodes around that, blind is ridiculous.
Yeah,
and you can't just start taking contacts in and out because that's going to start to hurt your eyes. So I imagine that he was wearing them all the time.
Yeah, maybe not the contacts so much because he doesn't take the visor. But then again, he has the visor on. Yeah. You can't see anything through the visor.
Yeah, is great visor.
Yeah,
I love that visor. So a powerful mind is detected as they're going through space, and then they come up to a force field, which kind of looks like Minesweeper and also looks like a space fence. And that's when we meet Christopher Columbus, is what I wrote. He arrives onto the ship speaking very 1492-ish.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what he's...
It's very Shakespearean.
But sounds like he's getting it wrong.
Yeah.
He just threw in a bunch of TH at the end of stuff. But and he says he's dressed as a proper ship's captain.
Yeah, so he's a pirate.
Yeah.
And we find out that is John Delancey's Q.
Yeah.
And Q might be right out the gate, he's the most powerful person that we've seen. And he freezes the member of the crew, who is Lieutenant Torres.
Yeah.
And he just ice cubes him.
Right. I don't know. He might die, but
he's
a red shirt. He's not going to come back. But
they touched on it like, we needed people to thaw him out, but that was it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, sorry, Torres.
I generally don't like we talked about this when we mentioned Superman innocuously and even the Time Lords. I don't like omnipotence, and like I don't like it in comic books. I don't like it anywhere else. I kind of don't like Superman because he can't be beat because of that, like omnipresence, omnipotence. I don't like it, and I But I do kind of like it in this. I think he's good in this. Yeah. And I think he doesn't get beat. He just gets put on hold for a minute, you know? Like,
yeah, he kind of disappears for a while.
Yeah.
And
he establishes rules. And, you know, Picard says, look, as long as you play by these rules, I'll play your stupid game.
Yeah, and he thinks that humans are a savage race.
Yeah.
And
he's got a lot of good examples.
Yeah, and I think Data says that prejudice is absolutely human nature.
Yeah.
You know, it runs in human nature. So for parts one of Encounter at Farpoint, we're going to see Q as our antagonist.
Yeah.
And then he goes away for a good chunk of part two where you're like, is this a whole, like, what's happening? What
it does seem like an ABC story. Yeah. Like, but they all do kind of come back. But
I forgot about Q.
Yeah.
Like, and 55 minutes into it, I was like, okay.
I think that's like pretty cool that you're able to forget. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's that going on. Yep. Here he is again. But I think Picard, and I think they do this to show that Picard is, they set a character precedent here. Like, he's a diplomat, and he's ready to take the stump for everybody. Like, yeah. He becomes Lawyer Picard, you know, four or five times a season. And okay. They're always really good, because he's always arguing about morality. And
we absolutely see that in the courtroom scene.
Yeah.
Where he's defending his whole crew. And, I mean, it needs to be noticed that, you know, half your crew's not there.
He's not even defending the crew as much as he's defending
the human race.
Yeah, and the progression of the human race. Should they be allowed, you know, this super being is saying you're not allowed into to make any advances.
So. Yeah, and Q's like, you're a savage race. And Picard keeps telling him, like, no, we've come a long way. Yes, we were savage and prejudiced, but we come a very long way. And Worf and Yar don't want to hear any of it.
Right.
And there's great character building in this. You see how demanding Q is. You see how diplomatic Picard is. But then you see how easily triggered Worf and Yar are.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they're like, all right, let me just stun this guy.
Yar fits, and I don't know, off the top of my head, and I losing Trekkie cred by not knowing this right away. But, you know, in 20 episodes, I think that's how many she's been in. I can't remember, but she gets a lot of backstory, and you figure out, you know, why she's a security, and like she would have never amounted to more than a security officer, not in a bad way,
yeah,
but that would have been her life. Like, she would have advanced through security.
I'd like to know the reasoning behind her getting killed. I wish we would, like, maybe there's something that we can like dig up, but I'd like to see, like,
she has. I mean,
if you get 20 episodes of of character building
and lots of it,
and then
she's
a main
character, and she's a main, like, you know, people. What's his name got killed in Game of Thrones? I walked away.
No, Ned Stark.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert from the 2009 series Game of Thrones.
So you know, maybe they want to kind of pull the same thing. They took a popular character. People probably respond. I don't know how people in 1987 responded to anything.
You know,
a letter writing campaign.
Yeah, probably. Well, what the 80s was, that's the year around when in comics they killed off Dick Grayson, right?
Yeah.
Or was it not Dick Grayson?
They had the vote.
They killed Jason Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, you would just get the back of your TV guide.
Right.
And say, all right, well, Phil, send us a letter if you like it or not, or vote for this if you like it or not. So, man, long-distance phone calls were probably
pretty... Well, you hear about them always doing letter writing campaigns back in the day. They get shows prolonged, and, maybe that's what it was. I don't know if they had conventions. I'm sure they probably did, but...
Yeah, but they were comic book conventions. Like, yeah. WonderCon and the sci-fi cons, they weren't out there. With this one, like, especially Denise Crosby, she's extremely popular at all the cons. She's at every con that I've been to, I think. So she's like,
well,
she always
became
had a line.
So popular in the series. There was not a backlash. I mean, it was a story. You know, people loved her or liked her enough, and they didn't force the writers to do anything, but the writers responded by bringing her back in a way.
Okay,
at least Denise Crosby was in a couple episodes.
I'm gonna do some searching by next episode, next mission. I'll have some answers. I'm really interested in that. But back to the story, we see this is where Picard, and I wrote down, is ready to take the training wheels off the Enterprise and not fight Q, but completely outrun him, but not run away though. It's like, you're not gonna retreat. You're just gonna go further than he can go, and that's a cool, like, Are you retreating? Does that show weakness, or are you just trying to advance and save your people?
Save the people, get ideas, you know.
Yeah, because he says, all right, you know, we're just going to raise our deflectors. We're going to go as fast as we're going to warp as fast as we can. Well, and the fastest they got was 9.5.
Right. Which, you know, now they say they can get up to like 9.9. But
Q was going 9.9 at one point.
I think that this is still the same thing. They're establishing the character of Jean-Luc Picard. Because, you know, we only had one captain. Well, two, technically. But one captain at this point, and he was kind of a shoot-first kind of guy in Kirk.
Yes.
And, you know, he was like...
Shoot first, sleep later.
Yeah. So, I think they're establishing that, you know, Jean-Luc Picard's a totally different captain.
Mm-hmm.
He takes it a lot more seriously, and he's willing to reach out to... willing to use all his resources, which are his people.
And he's a theatrical captain too. Like, he's a showman.
Yeah.
Like, where, but not in like in like I'm gonna stand you up like Kirk would. Like, I'm gonna be out. I'm gonna be the focus of everything. Picard was like, I'm gonna mind game. I'm gonna control your mind, because the only other, and this is, I mean, I don't have a lot of Star Trek cred, but Nemesis, his whole battle with Tom Hardy's character, just. That was a mind game in itself. Yeah. That could have been a whole season in my mind.
That's kind of true, I think. He's not like a big man.
Yeah.
But he plays a big man. Like, he's
an average size. Like, he's skinny. He's like older.
He pushes people around a little bit, and he does that with, I guess you could say, his intellect. Like, he is. No one scares him when it comes to, like, even Q with his omnipotence or omnipresence, or I can't remember all the omnis, but
omnivore.
Well, it's like knowing everything, being able to do everything, and then I don't know.
Well, yeah, Q is essentially an alpha.
Yeah,
and he wants the beta, Jean-Luc, and Jean-Luc's like, no, I'm an alpha too.
But Jean-Luc played back a little bit, kind of.
Yeah, Q's that
he wilted a little bit. To learn the rules. Once he knew the rules, he kind of big dogged Q a little bit and said, "These look, you made these rules. You got to follow them."
Yeah, when he froze Yar.
Yeah,
they get to the courtroom. He freezes Yar, and he's like, "Listen, you said that nobody on our crew was going to be hurt, and look at what you're doing. This is in front of your home, like a bunch of homeless people. That's what it looked like, a bunch of poor people." But Q has some type of psychic powers. Obviously, he can beam himself anywhere he wants to. He can, I mean, he's just a very demanding and powerful space being.
But he is an alpha.
Yeah.
And he's, you know.
He reminds me of, if we're going to go current times, he reminds me of Ego from Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Where he's just this, I'm this eccentric guy. He's a magician, essentially, where I'm gonna wow you, and you're going to be scratching your head like, how the hell did that happen? Right. And I'm always going to win. So while I'm getting you with the trick, I'm taking your watch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's just out there to make people look stupid.
Picard, and this is like, I look at it like Picard's playing mental, like, Aikido with this guy. He's giving him a little bit, and then as soon as he gets the chance, this guy apparently knows everything.
Yeah.
He's, you know, tripping him up. So Picard doesn't get intimidated by any, like, type of intelligence. And, you know, whereas Kirk was smart, but... Once he ran out of smarts, he was like, all right, well,
I'm a brute.
Let's blow everything up. We'll blow a planet. I don't care what we blow up. We'll just blow everything. We got, you know.
Yeah, Picard's last thing is, let's save the violence for last.
Yeah. And that's why he, you know, he reins in Worf. Like, he's got a leash on Worf and Yar, so.
Is he your favorite captain?
Yeah, he might be.
Yeah, I think so. Out of the two things that I've seen him in, as far as Star Trek, he's probably my favorite. But, so, they're going to outrun Q, and they're going to do this thing called saucer sep, where they're going to detach the saucer part of the ship and save the rest of the people on there, because there's kids, there's families, there's, and at this point, it was really great. It was a great, not character building, but set builder for me, because they show you what else is on the ship without spending an episode on.
They make
on
Star the Trek into a big place, like it's a world.
Yeah, I felt like for this pilot, I felt like I took a tour of the ship. Without wasting any time and without it being unnecessary. And I got to know all the character backstories. Like you knew, like you knew about Geordi and how he was blind.
It's
you knew that Deanna and
well, we were talking about the Orville, how they introduced, how that he brought all his senior officers into a room and introduced, and
just, yeah, gave
basically saying these are all the actors that are going to be on the show. Listed the same thing by not even like, and it wasn't even that ham-handed. It was just.
It flows right into the story.
Yeah, it was a very, very subtle introductions and
yeah, Geordi's getting seen by a Crusher.
Yeah,
and he goes, "Well, this is why I'm blind," you know. And then, you know, the introduction of Deanna to Riker, and they know each other. Even the introduction of Wesley and Picard.
Yeah,
no, just seeing those two, like,
and seeing that Picard has a past with his mom and his dad and everything.
And just seeing how smart Wesley is.
Right.
Like that, this kid's on there for a reason, and they're focusing on this child for a reason, not just because he's the doctor's son. So there's, they did a really good job to that. So they start to, they're running from Q, but then they have to surrender to Q. And that brings us to the Shang Tsung coming in with a very little person, like a bodyguard, a bailiff.
With a goddamn cowbell.
Yeah. There was a lot of cowbell in this episode. And it's a whole courtroom scene where Q is the judge, the jury, and the executioner.
Yeah.
And that's where we go back to Yar gets frozen by Q, and Patrick Stewart becomes a diplomat, becomes a lawyer. So what did you think of this whole setup of this scene? Because this is an important scene, I think.
Literally, like, everything about it. I like the way it was shot. I think it was shot great. They keep... John DeLancey's Q is supposed to be on a floating chair, and they pulled all like he's moving in and out of frame. He like gets into Jean-Luc's face, and he moves out of. It's really neat. It looks good for night. That's a thing. We don't have to preface this. Anybody that watches the show doesn't really have to preface this with, "Oh, well, it's 1987. Good." No, it's good.
Yeah, it holds up.
It holds up. It's a really good looking shot, and it's really good looking scene.
Yeah, even the beaming.
Yeah,
it was crisp.
So, I really liked it, and I, like I said, like knowing and seeing every episode and knowing how his character is. This was a good, like, this exactly shows you who he's going to be for the next seven seasons. You don't know at the time. He does, you know, there's minor tweaks and changes.
Yeah.
But you're seeing the foundation in this scene.
Yeah.
Because I guess they have the four main guys besides Riker and Geordi.
Yep.
So I think it does a great job of just laying down the foundation for everybody.
This was probably the best scene in the entire episode. It was the most important to me because you get to see, again, it goes to that alpha chess match where Picard and Q are just battling for position.
Right.
And it goes back to, like you said, the Aikido. You get to the point where it looks like Picard's just going to give up.
Right.
But he says he's guilty. They're guilty. Humans are guilty, but under his provisions. I think that's a bold move because he could have, you know, you walk in there and the courtroom is, it's Oliver Twist like,
yeah,
where it's a bunch of old, dirty people and rags and like they're greasy. And then you got these soldiers with machine, like wrist machine guns.
Yeah.
And then Q comes in on a parade float with like a, he looks like the Chiquita
banana. Some dry ice on
him. He looks like the Chiquita banana just rolling in. And there's a whole, like, you could be like, all right, this is, one, it's crazy, but two, like, this is really intimidating. This guy can freeze us at the snap of a hat, drop of a hat, and this guy, he has an army of machine gun men.
Yeah.
Like, these soldiers should shoot us.
That he can create.
Yeah.
Just out with his mind, he creates a reality-warping character.
And he shows his power, Q, shows his power by saying, you know what, you're outstepping your bounds, machine gun guard, you're dead.
Yeah.
Get him the hell out of here. And it was really good. I thought this was great. And again, we haven't met Riker yet.
Right.
We're 30 minutes into the episode.
I think we get like, parts one and two are one episode. And yeah. That's how it ran.
We got halfway through. I wrote it down. 30 minutes in, we meet Riker on Farpoint Command.
And, you know, to establish somebody that's going to be a huge character.
Yep. And Farpoint is really cool. It reminds me of the episode in Deep Space, or Voyager that we did. With the mullet with the rat tail, that guy, the Armenian salesman.
That is going to be like every space station and port that they ever go, like Star Trek. That's a Star Trek port.
Okay,
it's always like an outdoor market,
and it's nothing like the flea markets we have here in Jersey, because flea markets we have here in Jersey involve a lot of produce and overalls. But we then meet Groppler Zorn of Farpoint, who is hiding things from Riker. Yeah. And things are magically happening on Farpoint, where Riker would say, you know what, I want an apple. But you don't have any apples. You only have oranges, lemons, pears, and bananas.
Right.
And maybe a mango is in there. And boop, apples appear. So there's a lot of magic going on.
Yeah, and then Riker's like, I don't think that was there 1 second ago. Yeah,
but you know what? I'll take this apple. It looks delicious.
It's good.
I wouldn't eat a phantom apple. There's no way. If that just magically appeared, I would be like, you know what?
I changed my mind. I wouldn't either.
I don't want any of your shit.
I was trying to watch it without remembering.
Yeah.
And I kind of did.
That's how I watch everything that we do.
Because it was a mess in my house, and you came over around this. No, you came over after this.
Yeah, I think I came 56 minutes in, because that's where I start. You were at where I started this morning.
So, you know, I didn't like him. And maybe I was, like, projecting the fact that I knew what happens, but he was I really don't like this guy.
Yeah, he's a very unlikable character. Yeah. He's a dirty Gandalf who just is hiding. He's hiding something.
Well, this is supposed to be weak. Maybe this is writing, whatever, directing, but he's supposed to be the governor of an advanced civilization on an advanced planet who could, they're apparently building like these really crazy space stations.
Yeah. He looks like a high priest of the homeless community. Yeah.
And he was like, it just, I don't know.
And Groppler.
Groppler Zorn.
What is that?
And he looked like, you know, long shaggy hair, like he didn't like, he did look homeless. He looked like homeless, and then he just like took a fresh shower and got like found a robe outside or something.
Yeah, he was the most unlikable character in this entire episode. And then we meet Wesley Crusher at the mall with his mom, and Riker and his mom want to be friendly, but there's some tension going on. Then they talk about the Crushers knowing John Luke, and then Geordi debuts.
Yep,
I wrote, oh hey Geordi, and then Riker is briefed on what happened. By watching the video of the first half of the premiere.
Well, that's right. Riker is now on the Enterprise, and Jean-Luc doesn't say shit to him.
Yeah.
Well, he's on the Enterprise sans saucer, and Jean-Luc's like, hey man, just watch the video. There, a lot of shit happened. Yeah. I don't really. And they kind of have, I guess that would have been their flashback to the first
that's
episode.
Previously on Star Trek, and it would have just been like, well, here we are.
It kind of reminded me of like Spaceballs when they're buying the video, and he's like, "You're recording now?" He's like, "Yeah, now." But I was waiting for that whole bit to like go off.
It was a cool little segue. It gives you, again, it's important that if you forgot what, like, if this is week by week, if you forgot what happened in the week before, you're able to get a chance.
And like
to
you're saying, we're 10 minutes now without Q.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, that's the purpose of all this.
Exactly. So Riker's briefed. Riker does a good job reconnecting the saucer. Picard kind of interrogates Riker on decisions that he's made previously. So there's been some issues with Riker. He
establishes that he's kind of like, he's got one hard and fast rule: captains don't go on away missions.
Yep,
and that's it.
And then Picard tells him, "Listen, I need you to help me around kids. there's a lot of kids on this ship. I didn't want kids on this ship, and you seem to be good with kids." I don't know how he knows he's good with kids. Like, was he watching him interact with Wesley?
Maybe, yeah.
But he was like, you know what? You're good with kids. I need you to help me. I need to. He's like the advisor to a mayoral candidate.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I got to kiss babies, but I don't like babies at all. They smell bad. And she's like, oh, you got to tell me. So Riker is his right-hand man, obviously, in command. But as far as helping him with the establish persona.
There is a there's a military structure.
Yeah.
But it is basically a flying city at this point with over, 15 or 1,200 people or something like that.
Yeah, and Picard doesn't want to come off like a dictator. He wants to come off like a diplomat. So he's going to have to learn.
So, yeah, he needs the people, which is weird that he'd go to his second officer and not go to the doctor who he has a relationship with and say, oh, you have kids and you're a doctor, so you have like...
But he doesn't want the doctor on there.
Like, it seems like it, yeah.
Because he tells her, he's like, I never invited you aboard. Like, why would you want to be on this ship if I remind you of your husband dying?
Yeah.
Is there any explanation of how the husband died? Like, Or is that just addressed like that? Like, yeah, your husband
he,
dead?
Yeah, it was. He died because in a fight, and, you know.
And that's it.
It got blood. Yeah.
Okay.
But Picard was. He wasn't a captain, but I think Picard was like the first officer.
Okay.
And you know, it was kind of his decision to go in, and they were friends. Picard was. You can find out through the series he was friends with the family, but there's always been like a thing between him and Beverly.
Okay.
And that thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay.
So,
well, we get it. Yeah. And, you know, when in space. So then we flash to Data, who's with the 137-year-old racist admiral who doesn't like Vulcans.
Yeah.
And that admiral is actually Dr. McCoy from the original series, which is really cool. It's his last acting role before he died 10 years later, but it was his last acting role. And he's in heavy prosthetics. But
Which is crazy. Take the prosthetic. He's an old man at this point. Yeah. Take the prosthetics off him. Just let him be an old man, like a regular old man.
Well, they turned him into a wizard.
Yeah.
I guess old men in space is essentially wizard.
Yeah.
Because we see it with Groppler Zorn, and now we see it with the Admiral.
Well, you know what they did is, I think they must have, you know, you ever watch Face Off?
Yeah.
The guy that is on Face Off is the head makeup guy for Star Trek. He's the older man that helps them all out.
Yeah.
Not Face Off, John Travolta movie.
No, I know we're talking about the sci-fi. Yeah. I love that show.
Yeah, and the blonde in it that hosts it, that's his daughter.
Okay.
But I think he must have done makeup for 1987. Okay. Not that it means it's bad, but you can get away with a lot more because below standard definition, you know, coax cable definition TV in 1987.
Yeah, long beards and long hair.
So, and you know, the old man makeup probably looked fine for 1987. Yeah. But when they remaster it and you see it in high definition, it's like, nope, doesn't stand up.
Kind of ridiculous. And then out of nowhere, Q shows back up.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I'm still around, guys. Still the bad guy.
Yeah,
this is what's going to go on. And he's on there. There's some exposition between him and Picard where he's like, you're running out of time. Yeah. And he's playing games. He's like, you told me you were going to do this, but now you're doing that. What are you doing, Picard? What are you doing, Jean-Luc? Are you the savage race that I know you are? I'm not going to give you any more time. And then it cuts away. We go back to Riker. Riker's with Groppler Zorn.
Yeah.
And Groppler Zorn...
Picard sends Riker down on a fact-finding mission saying, look...
Kidnap Zorn.
This is weird. If there's this many things going bad, we don't, you know... Well, he doesn't kidnap him until the spaceship shows up. But he's like, if it's that crazy down there, it needs to be looked into and, you know, take these five guys who happen to have names in the credits and go down there and figure it all out.
And Data and Geordi are becoming... Or not Geordi. Data and Riker are starting to establish a relationship that's explored in the next few scenes. But Groppler Zorn says to Picard and Riker, like, listen, if you don't want to take my offer, the Ferengi will.
Yeah.
And Picard and Riker are like, all right, well, you know, I hope it tastes better than the last contract.
Like, you see the Picard again doing some, like, you know, fighting him mentally. He's like, hey, man, like, giving him, like, every option.
Yep.
He's like, can we have some of your architects? He's like, no, we don't, you know. And he's like, can you come? Can this person come? And Groppler Zorn is being pretty elusive. He's like, this is the only base like this. If you don't want it, then there's going to be somebody.
Yeah. And he says to Ferengi, and you know, this is the Jean-Luc's moment, like, we don't negotiate with terrorists. All right, we're going to leave.
Yeah.
We don't need your shit. See ya.
All right.
And... that's when we go back to the ship. Riker, not knowing the ship, gives us a tour of the ship. So, like, we are with Riker in this set. This is
a lot of cool stuff happens in this scene that doesn't come back again.
Yeah, like the touch screen where it's like, find Data.
Yeah, that happens sometimes, but the lights lighting the path, mm-hmm. and then the computer just saying, hey, you know, you're there. That doesn't happen, but I wish it did.
Yeah, me too.
It was pretty cool.
It was, and we see another hologram, I guess.
It's the introduction of the holodeck.
Yes, right, holodeck. Here. That's where I wanted to call it. And Data is whistling Pop Goes the Weasel in a tree in a beautiful forest-like setting.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. He can't finish it, so Riker finishes it for him.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't understand this.
That was his Andy Griffith moment.
Yeah.
And then,
well, it establishes you need some type of humanity to figure it out, or he's, I don't know.
This was one of the scenes that was kind of, okay, this was filler to me.
Well, it was to show off the shiny new holiday.
Exactly. And I'm not bitching. I like it.
Yeah.
There was one part of the scene that I thought was really cool, and I don't know if Brett Spiner did this or there was a stunt double. Will Wheaton's character, Wesley, falls into the lake. Data jumps from the tree and in one move goes from rock to rock so effortlessly. So if Brett Spiner did that, that's amazing. If a stunt person did that.
I don't even want to look it up because I want to believe
that it was Brett Spiner. And it was I wrote it down. I was like, Data saving Wesley was really impressive.
Yeah. Because it's another character building.
Yeah.
Look, he's not just a computer with a memory core. He's like physically.
He's fast. He's agile. He's coordinated, and he lifts Wesley up by the collar and holds him over his head like Mufasa or like Rafiki did Simba in The Lion King.
And you see, Riker wasn't expecting. He's like, oh, he's strong too, not just
Data is probably the most valuable person on that on that ship in my mind, and that's when Riker kind of interrogates Data and is like, listen. This is all like an honorary position. He's like, no, man, I've been here for
24. I think he says like 17 years or something like that.
I graduated. This is why I'm here. Like, would you rather me not be here? Like, and he's like, no, but it's a human post. It's a human position. He's like, listen, I'd kill to be human.
Right.
But I'm far more superior than you.
Well,
he's not pompous.
No,
he's just.
This is blunt. A Brett Spiner thing that always comes back is playing honest, but without sounding like we're not used to somebody being that honest and not sounding like an asshole.
Yeah, he's
Brett Spiner does a good job of never being childish. It's never pompous because he doesn't really get human sometimes. But it's not a childish thing.
Yeah,
and it is everybody compares him to Leonard Nimoy as a Vulcan. Which is good company to compare it to.
Absolutely.
So, it's a different type of character because he's never anything. He doesn't have that capacity.
And I feel like they might have wanted to write him as like the C-3PO of the ship. Like he's like the artificial intelligence and he can make these one-liners because he doesn't get it. He's better than a C-3PO, in my opinion. He's much more valuable and does so much more. So,
well, he's, physically able to do more.
Yeah, he's not just waddling around.
Like, yeah.
I'm doing the C-3PO motion just for you. So that's a behind the scenes. Wesley is with his mother, and he's trying to bribe her into getting the seat of bridge. I like the inclusion of Wesley because it gives you another viewpoint. Because you could look from the other crew members, and they're adults, and they understand that that's a captain. But you get it from a kid's point. One, he's got ties to the Captain Picard because he knows his dad. And two, Picard doesn't do well with kids. So you're able to see the layers of Picard through Wesley's eyes. And I really like that.
Yeah, well, Wesley comes off not liking him because he's he's like, I don't know, he says something about, Wesley's trying to, sound like a 15-year-old in this, or Will Wheaton's trying to sound like a 15-year-old in this, but.
And Wesley oversteps his bound because he does see see the bridge. He takes a tour of the bridge, and he's sitting in the chairs, which, by the way, are super comfortable.
Yeah, they look comfortable.
Don't look very practical for space explorations because they're like video game chairs, but.
Well, that's why we talked about this. That's why, if you look at it, none of them have seatbelts.
Yeah, not at all.
If you watch the series, they fall out of the chair every day.
And there's no lumbar support.
Right.
It's like a J-shaped chair.
That's why the Orville and the new Star Treks have all put seatbelts on their bridges.
I like it. I like it a lot. Seatbelts save lives, Tom. If you learn anything from this podcast, it's that. So he sees the bridge. And then we go back to the catacombs of Farpoint. And Deanna Troi continues to feel this pain. She continues to feel pain, but she can't pinpoint it. And at one point, she actually just turns her mind off, essentially, and says, I don't want to feel this anymore.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you need to. And that's when it's like, okay, we're feeling more pain.
But, it's not... She feels the pain, but it's not... She can't place it. She can't find it.
She doesn't know if it's human. She doesn't know if it's alien. She just feels pain and constantly feels it. And then another vessel appears on the screen, arrives to Farpoint. Our crew on the Enterprise cannot hail it. They're not listening. and the ship is huge. I think they said it was 12 times the volume of the Enterprise, and then the ship begins to fire on Farpoint. And that's when we have the onslaught of Farpoint.
And it's your standard, it looks like your standard saucer-shaped UFO.
Yeah.
And
so
it was like, neat to see that. Like, it, you know, it was a spinning gray disc with a purple bulb in the middle, so...
And it was effective because it was destroying Farpoint. And Q returns again right after Picard orders to lock on phasers.
Right.
Q takes takes control of the ship. That's how strong he is. He continues. He takes control of the Enterprise. He makes a weird joke about the human noses. Although Q has a human nose, it's weird. We flash to back to Farpoint. The bombings are happening. Right. Part of our crew is there. Well, mainly it's just Data and Riker are there now because Geordi, Yar, and Deanna have been back up.
Maybe a bit of foreshadowing here, but while Data, not Data, yeah, Data and Riker are inside of the Farpoint station, which when you look at the planet is like a disc. It looks like a starfish.
Yeah.
Sort of. While they're in that station, nothing happens to them. They're fine.
Yep.
It's the outlying communities
destroyed. When they go into the town of Tombstone,
yeah,
it's all Western-like. They're blowing up all the buildings, and apparently we didn't see it, but Data and Riker were caught in the rubble.
Yeah.
Riker kind of, you see him rolling over, but Data rises like the Undertaker, and he gets up, and he's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Were you hit?" "Nope, I'm good. I'm good, too." Picard tells Riker that we're going to kidnap Groppler.
Yeah, let's do something. Yeah.
They're onto his shit. They know that
yeah.
he's hiding stuff. There's something going on. Deanna Troi's back in the ship, and she's like, and this is all happening while Q and Picard are having their issues, and Deanna's like, "I feel satisfaction and joy and happiness," and at that point, I'm like, she's feeling Q.
Yeah.
Because it's been established that Q is your villain. Right, he's back in there. He's playing all these mind games. You want to believe that Q is the only villain in this show,
right?
And he's not. And at the end, I had.
But you don't know who at this point. At this exact point, you don't know. You know Q's a villain. You're starting to think Groppler is.
Yeah.
But then you see Groppler isn't really. He is villainous, but he's not a villain.
He's a pawn.
Yeah, he's a pawn of something.
Yep. And. So. Riker and Data are going to kidnap Groppler. Groppler disappears. The same color, kind of like electric, that takes Groppler is the same type that comes out of Q. It's like that purplish blue, yeah. I noticed. And that's when I'm like, okay, Q is a real bad guy. Data and Riker are like, all right, we got to get out of here. They get back onto the Enterprise. Q's like, oh, I'm glad there's more feeble minds here. And I think that there's a point where... Q likes the way that Riker thinks. Riker says something, and Q's like, "Huh, I like that point."
Yeah, he does, and Q makes an appearance, I think, just about every season.
Okay. As he should, because he's a great character.
Yeah, and his next time that he shows up, he wants to make Riker a Q. He basically does that. He recruits him, but, you know, it doesn't work out, but that's another episode. But yes, he does like, and then he likes what something Deanna said. Like he sees Deanna as more intelligent and a higher.
Yeah, not quite as equal, but getting there.
Yeah,
because
she has extra, you know, sensory. You know, she's an empath. She feels people's emotions,
and at this point, she can feel the satisfaction while they're in the ship. But she can also feel the pain coming from the Bandai City.
Yeah,
and she's like, "All right, I feel it." But what's happening? So they go back to the Bandai City. They find Zorn, who's in a tunnel, like a wind tunnel, like electricity tunnel, and he's screaming in pain in the vortex. They get him out. They set their phasers to stun. They shoot the vortex. Vortex disappears. They bring him back to the ship. Q, Groppler, Picard, the rest of the Enterprise are there. Deanna makes the statement, there is only one alien taking control.
Right.
So we don't know what's happening. They find out that the ship is alive. The UFO that has come and started firing on the Bandai City and Farpoint is actually an alien. It's alive, and it looks like a sand dollar.
Yeah.
It kind of turns into a sand dollar.
Yeah, it turns, but...
And then a jellyfish.
While Riker was on that station, or on the ship, he recognized some of the same heads and some of the same architecture that's on as the actual Farpoint Station.
Yeah, under Farpoint, the walls were completely different. And then he gets to the Bandai City, and that's when he puts it together. Like, they're only attacking the Bandai City.
Yeah.
And it comes up to be like, okay, this jellyfish-looking creature.
Yeah, it grows legs.
Yeah.
And tentacles.
Yeah, very jellyfish-like, right? Yeah. They say, all right, you know what happens? Somebody kidnapped its mate or its partner. And Farpoint is actually its partner. And it really is. So they send, Picard orders a energy beam to go to Farpoint. It responds to the jellyfish creature. It responds to the energy beam. They turn the energy beam off. It reunites with its partner. And then there's the chastising of Zorn saying, you know, you kept this away from us. You already had the fossil fuel and the energies to keep it alive, but you didn't give it enough energy to thrive. So you turn this being into your paradise and didn't think there was going to be consequences. We're lucky we helped you, because they didn't want to help the Bandai because they were still in negotiations with a peace treaty. But
to join the Federation.
Yeah. So it was a bold move for Picard on his first day in command to say, we're going to save somebody that could or may or may not join the Federation. All for this crazy guy named Groppler Zorn.
that's the point that Q makes. Like, all right, Q's like, all right, you won this round.
Yeah.
Because Q expected them to blow something up.
Yeah, I think Q wanted.
And Q knew, apparently Q, you know, could see the future or see parts of it. Q knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, but Q didn't know the outcome. He gave these guys a test. And they passed it by not... Everything was done diplomatically.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, it's not always going to be the way, but it was the way that this happened.
You know? Q is essentially playing a space version of Dungeons & Dragons, where he's the dungeon master, and he's giving everybody else the chance to kind of either thrive or die.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point in the show, the episode's concluded, and I'm sitting at home on my couch like, all right, who was the true villain of this show? Was it Q with the manipulation being the game master and everything? Or was it actually Groppler Zorn?
Well, I think it was Groppler Zorn. Likewise. I don't think Groppler Zorn knew anything about Q.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know what Q's going to do. But what you find out is he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he just gets in your head.
He plays by the rules. He establishes rules. And if you could work within those rules and win and figure out the way that... You know, I know the thing is, like, I don't doubt that he would have killed everybody if they failed.
Yeah.
But they didn't fail. They passed the test. So.
And he could have killed everybody. Right. Like, we've seen his hand, and he's very strong. And, you know, with the episode ending, I know it's 30 years late, but this is a show I'm going to start watching. Yeah. Because I really liked it. And that, this is probably...
Q's like, he's like a Mr. Miplizik or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's exactly the same character. He doesn't come here intentionally to hurt anybody. He just wants to play a game.
Yeah, he's bored.
Yeah.
He's bored in his time, and he wants to mess with other people. I might say, go out and say, this is probably the best pilot I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, I think, well...
Of any show, even new or old. I mean, Star Trek Discovery's pilot was great. The Orville's pilot was great, but this was really, really good. This was probably my favorite show that we've watched thus far.
Well, one of the things is it created a lot of the tropes that we judge other shows by.
Yeah.
But I think this, not every episode, 176 episodes, they're not all winners. But I think this is. I think this a great way to start. And I think this is why it became 7 seasons successful. And I personally consider... Deep Space Nine and Voyager just a continuation of this, because it's this universe. It created the universe that they're in.
Yeah, and not a spinoff, just a continuation.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, it could have went bad.
Yeah, it absolutely could have went bad.
They could have rested on, well, we're Star Trek. There will be somebody to watch. They could have rested on those laurels. And that's the same thing we said about Discovery is like they could have, you know, they're hoping to use that name to draw people in, but they're going to create their own universe to keep people there.
Yeah, and which they have, and they're doing a great job. Discovery is still killing it.
Yeah.
It's a show got renewed for a second season. We can say that now. It's a show that I'm happy to watch. I know you you like it a lot. So, you know.
I think this is... The original was great, but it had its problems too. Yep. The pilot was horrible. The pilot was totally different than the actual show. And I think as far as pilots goes, this stayed very true to the pilot. Or, you know, the show stays very true to the pilot. Yep. They switch positions. Like, you know, Geordi becomes a chief engineer.
Yeah. You see people getting promoted.
Yeah.
Like you normally would at any job. If somebody's doing a good job, whether it's their expertise or not, they can get promoted. Well, we see it with football when Juan Castillo for the Eagles goes from defensive coordinator to offensive line coach.
Well, that's a thing that actually happens in this. And Star Trek in general. George Takei always talks about it is he became a captain. Like, he talks about how many promotions he got. And a lot of the actors say it. Like, it becomes, I guess in their head, it becomes a thing. Like, oh, well, I got promoted. My character got promoted. In 7 years, Geordi goes, I think he gets 3 promotions. You don't see any of them.
Yeah.
It just, someday he shows up, he's got more pips. And I kind of like the idea of, like, that's kind of the way, it is military, but it's kind of the way, like, but it's only military and tradition, not in actual. I mean, it is a, you know.
Well, they could have spent a whole episode on each promotion.
Right.
And it just really bogged the series down with feel-good stories. But, you know, this goes into, when you talked about the underlying tones of Star Trek, I picked them up on this one.
Yeah.
You know, there's morality, there was a little bit of racism, there was, you know, stuff like that. It wasn't super deep, but it was there.
Yeah.
It gave you something to think about.
Yeah, it shows it's in a way, it shows some of its age. You know, the McCoys are racist. Racist against
the Vulcans.
The Vulcans, and then there's like, you know, having this grand idea of what the Federation is, and you know, kind of it topples by the end. Like you kind of get a. By the time this is over and you're watching Deep Space Nine, you see that. Federation just a corporation or an organization like any other. It's got its really bad points, and so but I think it was a good starting point.
I agree, and it wouldn't be considered a good starting point if it didn't usher in more continuations.
Yeah.
We're still getting Star Trek, and you know, you're still seeing the real trailers coming out, like the honest trailer for this series came out this year, I think 2 months ago. They're still writing books on the lore of it. So this definitely holds up. 1987, 30 years, it holds up. So yeah. I suggest if you haven't seen this episode and you like what we're talking about, to watch it. And
I suggest if you... The best way to watch is the remastered. The remastered looks amazing. And they did a great job. It doesn't have, like... You watch anything else from this time period, like, stack this up against...
Swamp Thing.
MacGyver.
Yeah.
The A-Team. This is what's in its, like, they're like 1985-ish, but this came in 1987, and as a sci-fi show, besides the remastering, I think it looks great.
Yeah.
I think, and that's a lot of Gene Roddenberry saying, you know, he might be a futurist, because he's able to see, like, things would be a little different, you know, and you wouldn't, you know, and no wallets, no, like...
Yeah.
You don't see 1987 in this. Like,
no,
you see the future in the show a little bit. And the remastering just makes it easier to watch. But
you would see, if you go back to the original series, that pilot wouldn't hold up today.
Right.
Where this one, 30 years later, still holds up. And like you said, the shows in 87, they're not gonna hold up. Look at the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly not going to hold up. Look at the movies from 87, like a Beastmaster movie or The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. That's certainly not going to hold up with today. So this holds up. Watch it. Continue to support sci-fi and support us. Yeah, support us, because Lord knows we could use it. We are on all the social media platforms. We are on Instagram, the Galaxy Wars Podcast. We are on Twitter, The Grays, THEGRYS. We are on Facebook, Galaxy Wars Podcast, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Galaxy Wars Podcast, and we're also out there wherever you can stream podcasts. Right. So whether you have an Apple phone or an Android phone, or you're just working on a computer, type in our podcast, you'll be able to find our RSS feed. And we will be back next week and we're going to go on a mission to Asgard as we're going to break down the Thor franchise right after Thor comes out. So, and we'll give a little mini movie review of it.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Yep, maybe. Absolutely no spoilers. If there are, we'll add an amount. But we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.